Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we help you go further in depth into how to accelerate your personal development, manage the challenges in your life through complete connection to yourself, to others, and to your reality. Today, we're going to have a lot of fun with a thought experiment. And before we get started, a little shout out to our friends in Ashburn, Virginia, not far from where I am right now in Northern Virginia. Lovely area. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for this connection. So in this thought experiment today, we're going to have some fun with physics. And if you're not really into physics, that's okay. Just follow along. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And the argument I'm going to make is that physics proves that we are one consciousness, that it's not I'm a consciousness and you're a consciousness and somebody else is a consciousness, but that we are one consciousness kind of all together. Think of it like a hive consciousness. So this is how it goes. So in stage 10, we come to realize that there's only one consciousness and we are it. You'll get there. If you haven't experienced that yet or come to that realization yet, this might help. And this idea of there only being one consciousness can be hard to grasp, but a little bit of modern quantum physics and maybe a little oceanography. No, really. Can help us to see how this could be so and answers the question of when and where the one consciousness was, quote, born, and why we all seem to have our own mind, despite all of us being extensions of that one consciousness. Because that's a question that comes up as well. So strap in, this is gonna get nerdy, but the conclusions are totally worth it. So let's start with some laboratory experiment results. There are some interesting results, and you can Google these, that show that both photons, which don't have any mass at all, and electrons, which do have mass, behave like waves. So both photons and electrons, and perhaps other things too, but these are the ones we actually have evidence of, they behave like waves until they're measured or observed, and only then do they collapse into a particle, a thing. With location, and that this physical existence as a particle is temporary, lasting only as long as it's observed or measured. So the question I had for this one, well, what do you mean observed? And this observation is defined as, and has been shown to be, that the concept of the thing is generated in the brain of a human being. This is what they know so far. To be observed, so for example, if you say you observed that electron, it means that the concept of that electron and its location was generated in the mind of a person. It became known to them. You could think of it that way. The location became known to the person. It was observed. Now, further evidence suggests that time is a construct of the sentient mind as well, used to just make sense of our existence. Right, and Zeno had this. Zeno, thousands of years ago, talked about the arrow of time, that really, as the arrow is flying through the air, we look at it and we see it in different places along a path, and our brain just kind of stitches it together like a movie because it helps us. It helps us make sense of our world to have this concept of time. And yet other experiments on electrons in energy wells. An energy well, if you're not familiar with this, think of it like a little trap. It's like a box or a cage. A box is a better idea. So an energy well is like a box. And you put the electron in the box. And the sides of the box are so tall that it couldn't possibly get out. But you could lower the walls to different levels and experiment with whether or not the electron could get out. So that's one idea of a way to think about an energy well. So other experiments on electrons and energy wells have shown that all matter is energy, existing everywhere all the time, according to a probability density function. Only until our observation collapses that wave function, forcing it to choose a location in which to exist in physical form. You'd be like, what? Well, think of it like this. If you're not observing someone and they get in a car and drive away, you knew where they were when they got in the car. But the longer it goes, the more you really don't know where they are. They could be anywhere in a certain distance. They could be still in the same place, or they may have driven very far. And the longer this goes on that you haven't observed them, the wider radius in which they could be. So it's a similar kind of idea. If you don't observe the particle, well, you may know where it was last. That's in a perfect world. But then you don't know where it is. Well, it could have easily moved and gone somewhere else. Well, where did it go? Well, we don't really know where it is, right? We have a probability density function. That is, we have a function that tells us that it's probably in this area, but there's still a small chance it could be somewhere else. So when you have the energy well idea, an electron is trapped in the energy well box. There's a probability that it has gone magically through the wall and is on the other side of the box. And you say, yeah, but that probability is so small that it never happens. Well, actually, yeah, sometimes it does happen. That when you observe it, it's on the it's outside the box, even though there was no way that it could get outside the box that you're aware of. Well, it's because it existed as a wave function, not as a thing. It would be the equivalent of Schrodinger's cat turning into an energy wave and getting outside of the box. Which, given everything that poor cat goes through, might be a good idea. So these are sort of little bits and pieces. So we have the fact that particles are just waves. Think of it as pure energy. They go from matter to energy. They exist as energy until we observe them, and then they collapse into things, photons, electrons, and so on. And then we stop observing them, they go back to energy. So we know that. We know time might be just a construct of our minds, so we have to keep that in mind. And we also know that all the things, all the particles, exist everywhere all the time until they're observed. And then they exist somewhere specific, right? They have a specific location and velocity and so forth. So that's kind of interesting. And when we think about how we just periodically observe the locations of things, and our minds take this series of observations and string them together into a linear story in order to make sense of it, put all this together, and the conclusion is, therefore, that sentient consciousness creates everything. Because if there wasn't any sentient consciousness as a human being observing the thing, the wave function would never collapse and it would never exist in physical form. So sentient consciousness is required to create everything, to manifest our realities. We manifest our realities. Nothing exists until a sentient being conceives of it in their mind. And this isn't me saying it. This is the physics experiments. Everything exists as what I'm going to call potential existence, or just energy. all the time until a sentient being manifests it or collapses the wave functions into what I'll call kinetic existence, which is matter, right? So I love this idea of potential. You have potential energy and kinetic energy, right? Potential energy is sort of stored, and kinetic energy is bam, movement, and you're using it, and it's dynamic. So potential existence means, well, like there's the potential to is for something to exist, but it doesn't exist yet. It's just energy right now, which is a thing and exists, yes, of course, but it doesn't exist in terms of matter, a physical object. And then there's what I'll call kinetic existence. It has dynamically come into existence as a thing, as matter, and there it is. So those are the phrases I'm going to use, potential existence and kinetic existence. Is this a bastardization of the concepts of potential and kinetic? Absolutely. But that's what I'm going to do. Okay. So that's what we know. And let me repeat that, because this is kind of a big deal. Everything exists all the time until a sentient being manifests it. Until a sentient being collapses the wave function and makes it real. And this is what the physics says so far. So here's a really interesting question. How and when did the first sentient being come into existence? The first one, because here I am, and here you are, and here's this dog next to me, and there's various sentient beings, and there were our parents and our grandparents, so on and so forth. So when did the first sentient being really come into existence? That's an interesting question. The first sentient being could not have come into physical existence without first existing as potential existence, energy, right? So the first sentient being, whoever they were, could not have existed in physical form without first existing as energy. So let's approach this logically. Either, number one, there was a time after the Big Bang when no sentient consciousness existed at all. Or, two, a sentient consciousness always existed since the Big Bang, maybe before, but we're just going to mark it at the Big Bang. So let's start with the first one. Suppose that there was a time since the Big Bang, wherein this universe had no sentient consciousness in energy form or in physical form or anything. There was no sentient consciousness in the universe. So that means that during that time when there was no sentient consciousness in the universe, no waveforms would have collapsed from observation, and thus everything would stay existing as energy or waves everywhere, all the time. All the time. And physical objects would not come into existence ever because there was no sentient consciousness to collapse the wave functions. It would be a universe of 100% potential energy, energy only universe. There would be nothing to manifest the manifester or create the creator. And a sentient being would never come into existence because there would be nothing to bring the sentient being into existence. Okay, you could argue that there are forces we don't understand that could have brought the first sentient being into existence, and the fact that there are lots of things we don't understand is certainly true. But if just from this sort of physics-based perspective, this is what we get. So another argument is that sentience was a byproduct of evolution here on Earth, but in that case, there would have been no sentient being to collapse the wave functions to create the Earth in order for evolution to even get started. So that kind of falls apart. But do you see where I'm going? Therefore, it cannot be true that at the Big Bang there was not a sentient consciousness, but that later there was. Thus, a sentient consciousness always existed, at least since the Big Bang. And I parse it out from the Big Bang as we just don't know much beyond that. So a little bit of ignorance there. But what if the Big Bang was the birth of a sentient consciousness? What if it was one of many? What if in the field of potential existence, consciousnesses spring into being, each a universe birthed by a Big Bang? This consciousness, if we think in linear terms, which is human to do, I realize, you can imagine this consciousness is birthed in a Big Bang and is consumed in creative play in a space of potential existence within itself, because it is the only thing that exists, creating more and more complicated things, particles, forces, stars, planets, plants, creatures, and so forth. The original sentient consciousness is therefore within us. We are all part of the same whole that manifested us, and we can also in turn manifest new things. Now, similarly, we humans and dogs and other things are brought forth into the physical existence in a singular ecstatic episode, a mini Big Bang at the cellular level upon conception. And we're drawn to play. We create things and we create other conscious beings that are drawn to create and play and manifest, and onward it goes. We humans are part of the larger consciousness. We are physical manifestations of the one consciousness and embedded with that consciousness, and as such can create and play and manifest. The universe can manipulate waves and particles because it is the waves and particles, and we can manipulate them too because we are them. Albeit temporarily taking the viewpoint of the creatures we created. We are collectively the one consciousness, creating and playing and manifesting from our many viewpoints. We are everything, everywhere, through all time. If there is a universal creator, we are it, and it is in us and around us. The code of this universe, for example, the specific value for the charge of an electron, is its genetics, and it creates according to what it knows and what it is. In other words, I'm suggesting that God, Allah, the Tao, the Creator, whatever name you would like to call it, the divine force that created the universe as we know it, is the universe as we know it. It is in us, it is around us, it is us. But there's but one consciousness. And it's all around you and within you. You are an extension of it. We can manifest anything, not because we're special humans or somehow chosen, but because we are the universal consciousness. Any sentient being, that is, any creation that has the consciousness or any manifestation that the consciousness inhabits or had created, which is everything, can manifest anything from the space of potential existence into the space of kinetic existence, that is, from energy to matter. Well, how can that be? Wouldn't that mean that humanity would have like a hive mind? Well, you might notice that patterns repeat themselves from the microscopic level to the galactic level and beyond. For example, look at an image of a petri dish through a microscope and look at an image of a galactic nebula. You will not be able to tell the difference. They look the same. Because patterns repeat at every scale, we need only look at our own human scale to understand how things work. So looking then to other scales to find the same pattern of operation can help to verify our theories. It's not perfectly scientific, but it helps. That is, what is true at every scale from quantum to galactic is the real truth. And if we don't find the same pattern at every scale from quantum to galactic, then we don't really understand the real truth yet. So let's use this to consider how we're all part of the same sentient consciousness but do not have a hive mind. Consider the oceans and the rivers of the world. The oceans and the rivers are connected as one continuous body of water. But the interaction of that body with various localities gives it locally different properties. So, for example, the Caribbean and the rivers of Vietnam are parts of the same continuous body of water. Now, look at a map, right? the Mississippi River flows into the Gulf of Mexico, which flows in with the Caribbean and the Atlantic, which flows to the Pacific. They're all connected physically, one giant body of water. But locally, they're very different. The rivers of Vietnam and the Caribbean, even the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico, have very different characteristics. Why? Because of their local surroundings. But regardless, that is one body, one giant body of water. Similarly, there's one consciousness. The interaction of that consciousness with local environments causes localized variations in that consciousness, but it's still just one continuous consciousness. We're not only each part of the whole, we are also each the whole. We create things and we create other things that can create things of their own. We manifest, and not all that creatively, actually. We tend to manifest rather evolutionarily at every level, planetary, species, cellular, and so on, rather than revolutionarily. So the next question that I tend to get on this is, why don't we all know that we're the one consciousness? Well, I think we do know it. But we're conditioned into believing that we are separate from each other and that we're separate from other things. We're conditioned to believe in deities that can create us, but we're told that they're separate from us. And not knowing or not having any confidence that we inherently know, we buy it all, and so we separate ourselves from everything. Because you can manifest anything. If you decide that you're separate, then so you are. What if everything we learn as small children is wrong? We learn that I'm separate from mom and dad and everyone else. And we learn that my body has a boundary, which is these parts and nothing beyond. And we learn that the object is still there, even if I can't see it. And we learn that there's a larger force or a deity in the universe, but it has no connection to me at all. What if all that's wrong? What if we enter this world as yet unable to speak with exactly the right idea and we spend our whole lives working our way back to it? The universe has a sense of humor. Maybe it's time to trust our intuition. But if you're not ready to trust your intuition, trust the physics instead. I hope this has been fun. I recommend that you look at the research for yourself and think about this, decide this for yourself. Think of it for yourself. If you have questions, you can go to the community page. You can get there by clicking the link in the show notes just below. Go to the community page and send in your questions with the form there. Or you can send it to questions@koabd.com. Either way, I will get it. Let me know what your questions are. Let me know how I can help. Whew, so that's quite a lot for today. Let's end it there. Thanks for joining me. And as always, I am wishing you, Perna Asante, complete connection.